Roll up, roll up. Ladies and gentlemen, beggars and harlots, urchins, vagabonds, miscreants, ne'er-do-wells, ignoble noblemen, and libertines alike.
Ladies and gentlemen, those of you from this world and the next, it gives me great pleasure to present the Satanic Player Society, traveling sideshow of the macabre. Join us as we bring you wonders from the abyss, prose from the shadows, and tales of horror and madness. Now, it brings me great joy to introduce tonight's performers, each bringing their own skills and talents to the show. Please be standing and give a round of applause for
Alec, the Human Cannonball. This man, he knows no fear. Witness his extraordinary feats as he launches himself through fire and flame, through bricks and mortar, in each daring display of bravery. Or, my friends, is it madness? Cameron, the Human Blockhead. This man can take it all. Pins, nails, tent spikes, and power drills. Don't let the name deceive you, my friends. Beneath his indestructible skull sits a sharp, maniacal brain, constantly plotting ways to try out his tools on you. Citizen Balafar, the Carnival Barker.
Roll up.
This man has the voice to draw you in. His thundering calls stir and shake you to the bone. I recommend not getting on the wrong side of this gentleman. If he turns his dulcet tones to anger, his earth-shattering cries will split you in two. D.A. the Lycan. We bring you something really special here, my friends. Marvel during each full moon as this man transforms from a mild-mannered individual to a raging, feral beast of the forest. Be sure that this creature does not catch a whiff of your scent, or else you will become the focus of the evening's hunt. Delilah, the Snake Charmer. Watch and listen as this lady's wondrous music casts its spell. Serpents of all shapes and sizes slither and come to her call. Mesmerized they are, they follow her every move. I would advise showing the utmost respect when dealing with this lady. If suitably offended, she may decide to send some of her more venomous words your way. Hydra, the Unicorn. Before your very eyes, we present to you this magnificent creature of lore and legend. For centuries, she has been the guardian of the woods and Greenland. Wariness free tread is advised when you enter her domain. If you're not careful, you may find yourself on the receiving end of her alicorn blade. Rachel, the Dragon Lady. Her scales are as tough as steel, her claws sharper than any blade. But that's not the most terrifying thing about this lady. The fire she breathes can turn a person to ash in mere seconds.
Well, here we are again, my friends. I hope you brought a large appetite with you this evening.
as we have a delicious serving of entertainment for you. This is the first of three shows featuring tales from Bon Appetit, stories and recipes for human consumption. A wonderful anthology compiled by Alder Strauss and Hydra M. Starr, and hosting a myriad of fantastic authors. Tonight's story features loss, guilt, and a path to enlightenment and revenge. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to bring you A Banquet of Panacea, written by Rick Powell.
Breaking news out of Illinois this evening. In a bizarre turn of events, William Samuels is free tonight, much to the outrage of not just the residents of the town of Cooper's Bend, but to the nation. The trial of William Samuels, a.k.a. Bus Driver Willie, hit the media by storm weeks ago when he was arrested for the abduction, torture, and murder of six children in that Southside town. The Department of Justice has started an investigation into the handling of evidence in this case, and there was even outcries for Judge Wilkins to step down. The Attorney General will be issuing a televised statement in the next hour regarding how the CPBD may have gravely mishandled this arrest. The parents of the victims were all unavailable for comment.
John, are we really doing the right thing?
Meredith asked with nervous apprehension. She tried not to look at the darkened stage that was before them. The crimson grand drape that hung down seemed all the more heavy in the newly converted theater. Her once delicate hand was rubbing the freshly lacquered smooth finish of the large mahogany table that they sat at. She tried to hide how her other hand was on her thigh, clutching the blue fabric of the evening dress she wore. John put his hand over hers, feeling the bones through her skin. He remembered how strong and full her hands used to be, all those years ago when they first met. He tried not to notice how dry, like parchment, they felt now as he answered.
Honey, it is. We both know it is. We've come too far to turn back now.
He gave her a feeble smile and wondered if his eyes seemed as heavy as hers, clutching her hand a little tighter for reassurance. She sighed and straightened up in her seat. But even the soft cushioning on the oak chair could not release the tension in her shoulders. She looked at the curtain stage 50 feet before them and scanned the arch of it high above. The bone-white comedy and tragedy masks almost seemed to scrutinize her and John menacingly. Meredith tried to stall, coming here as much as possible by changing her dresses, trying to hide some of the silver strands in her red hair, and redoing her makeup. But John saw through it and waited patiently. Even with the two-hour drive, they still managed to be the first ones to arrive. There was barely any traffic this late in the evening. She turned her head to look at him. He seemed almost boyish in his black suit, his tie slightly askew, as he shifted in his seat. She noticed how he missed a few spots when he shaved. The stubble had a tinge of gray that matched the shade of his temples.
God, we have both aged so much over the last few years. Where has the time gone?
She thought. She swallowed hard, trying not to think about the years that had passed. It still felt just like yesterday. She sensed he knew what she was thinking.
Remember that opera we went 2 years ago? I think it was our first date, and I thought I would try to impress you by being cultured.
He chuckled, shuffling in his seat.
I cannot believe that happened.
She gave him a weak grin, looking down in recollection.
You tripped over that man's foot getting to our seats. When you hit the floor, your fart could be heard all over the opera house.
She closed her eyes and shook her head.
And when I got up, I said,
I guess the fat lady sang.
Meredith cut him off, giggling. She looked at him as he gazed into her eyes. She felt she couldn't have loved him more than at that moment. What he said in that glance communicated more than any words could say. His distraction worked, if only for a little while. Meredith took a deep breath and looked around. This theater was much smaller than the opera house they attended years ago. With the absence of a mezzanine or a balcony, she guessed this facility could accommodate about 200 people at best. It was hard to gauge since the remaining area behind the table they sat at was void of seating of any kind, the evidence of which was erased by the slight sheen of wax on the newly refurbished hardwood floor. When they first entered, her high heels echoed loudly all through the interior, no matter how lightly she tried to tread. She figured John must have been reading her thoughts when he said,
It must have cost a small fortune to remodel this. I'm guessing this must have been where the orchestra pit was.
He tapped the toe of his dress shoe on the floor, and a slight, hollow echo bounced off the acanthus motif of the freshly papered walls. The brass consoles attached to them seemed to flicker in reply. He looked at the remaining six seats on the side of the table where they sat. The reddish hue of the oval cushioning almost seemed to stand at attention as they faced the stage. The large table could have seated at least 25 people all the way around.
One of those chairs alone is half our mortgage payment a month,
he muttered.
I don't see how...
The interruption of a door opening far behind them stopped him in mid-sentence. Their heads both turned in trepidation towards the sound that, seconds later, announced a young couple, pausing as they entered and giving John and Meredith a cautious look. The youthful-looking woman's hand clasped onto the forearm of her blonde-haired companion in slight fear. He put his on hers protectively. They almost seemed like members of a church showing up late to a congregation meeting, much to the chagrin of the other attendees in how they were attired. He in a white long-sleeved shirt, black tie and matching pants, and her in a formal white summer dress. Her other hand clutched a small purse to her chest as she tilted her head up to the gentleman that was taller than she. Her matching flaxen hair was in a modest ponytail, and John gauged them to be about the same age. She waited expectantly for the young man to say something as he stood there, jaw clenching in either embarrassment or indecision. After a few moments, John sensed the consternation of the young man and blurted out,
"Come on in, the party will start soon!"
Meredith briskly put her hand on his arm.
"Here,"
she murmured. The couple looked at each other. The young man shrugged his shoulders, then motioned his head for them to both proceed. The close-knit pair hesitantly entered, their footfalls resonating all around the theater as John gave Meredith an apologetic grin. The couple looked around the expanse of the theater in silence, their attention diverted to the large curtain stage. John stood up and walked towards them, his arm outstretched.
"I recognize you from the trial,"
he said solemnly.
"I'm John Richards. You must be Jerry and Ellen Coswell."
The young man looked at the extended hand and shook it reluctantly.
"It's Jeremy,"
he replied. He swallowed hard and turned to the young girl next to him. She diverted her eyes in a guilty manner as John nodded in her direction.
Your sister, she was... I mean... I am sorry,"
he stammered. The young man pulled the woman close to him.
"Thank you,"
Jeremy interrupted, as he held Ellen close to himself protectively.
"Sarah. Her name was Sarah,"
Jeremy followed, his voice grave.
"Before our parents died, we promised them we would watch over her."
His dead-eye stare looked into John's, waiting for a response, but hoping not to get one.
"I'm Meredith,"
John heard his wife say as she came up from behind him, relieved that he did not have to reply.
"I am deeply sorry for your loss."
She shook both of their hands as Ellen's eyes scrutinized her.
"Your daughter was Janet,"
Ellen said softly.
"The same age as Sarah."
John looked at Meredith as she answered.
"She would have been 12.
The two women looked at each other with an emotion that John could not define. Something resembling pity and defiance. His wife's eyes started to shine from the feeble light in the tear that she was fighting not to let fall.
"She would have been 12.
She repeated. Their heads all turned in unison to the familiar sound of the door again opening behind them, only to be slammed shut loudly by the large figure that entered. The rotund man in a gray business suit strode briskly towards the two couples. The glint from the sweat on his balding head matched the spectacles that he wore.
"I hope this is not some goddamn joke,"
he said in a heaving breath.
"Is Mr. Zhang here yet?"
The couples looked at each other, in a loss at what to say. John was in the process of attempting to answer when the portly man looked at the watch on his fat wrist.
"I am here right on time, at least. I thought I was going to be fucking late. My phone has been ringing off the hook at my office from the goddamn reporters calling. He did say 8 o'clock, right?"
Jeremy and John looked at each other with a mixture of confusion and embarrassment.
Yeah.
Jeremy was the first to answer.
"That is what he said when he invited us."
"Invited my ass? It was almost like a direct order as far as I'm concerned,"
the man blurted out, spittle flying from his lips.
"He creeps me out to no end."
"I think that is unanimous here,"
John added.
"I am sorry. I don't believe we have met."
The man extended his hand. The sausage-like fingers gripped John's like a vice as they shook.
"Striner. Lewis Striner. You are Richards, right? I remember you."
John blinked in a slight uncertainty in failing to recollect the gentleman before him.
"Yes. Yes, I am."
He turned to his wife in an attempt to gauge if she had any memory of the man when Jeremy remarked.
You were in the back of the courtroom shouting when the verdict was read.
Damn straight! Everyone knew he did it! Everyone! Damn police fucked it up royal! The missing search warrants, the mishandling of my niece's evidence bag. Those prosecuting attorneys did not know what the fuck they were doing. Idiots!
He barked, pointing a stubby finger at Jeremy. The young man flinched. Meredith put a hand to her mouth in shocked recollection.
Susie. Susie Holmes. She was your niece.
The man's shoulders slumped as he lowered his hand and looked to her, a somber expression coming to his face.
Yeah. Yeah, that girl was an angel. What that monster did to our family. What my sister.
Lewis looked at the four faces staring at him, noticing the shock that was still there from his entrance and outburst.
I'm sorry. These last 6 months since the trial ended, and with Sylvia.
As the red on his craggy face was turning from rage to embarrassment, Ellen walked up to him and put her hand on his forearm.
Please, sit.
She said tenderly. She looked at the others.
Let us all just sit. He should be here any minute.
Lewis looked at her and nodded. They all pulled out the heavy chairs, the feet scraping loudly on the wood floor. They all seated themselves. John and Meredith in the seats they were in before, with a young couple on their right and Lewis on their left facing the front of the stage in silence, waiting.
Is this it?
Jeremy asked in a forlorn voice.
Are we the only ones?
I guess so.
John answered with a deep sigh. They all looked at the curtain as it hung motionless on the stage above. Lewis checked his watch again.
8:05? What the hell?
He whispered.
We've known this guy for almost 2 years, and he has never been late by a second.
Lewis pulled the folded letter out of his inside jacket pocket, tossing it on the table in front of John. John unwillingly picked up the paper and opened it, knowing what it would say, but reading it anyway.
As I communicated to you months ago, if the outcome of the trial took the turn that we all feared, I would send you instructions on what I would have to do to take the next step in doing what has to be done. The legal representation I hired for you and other five families did what they could do. But sadly, the carelessness, mishandling of key evidence, and the arresting procedures of the county of Cooper's Bend was unconscionable. I have been taking the beginning steps to make sure that justice will be done. Since it seems that the legal system has failed, not just you, but all parties involved miserably. I have had confirmation from a few other families that they would commit to proceed to the next level, and I hope you will be joining them. Unfortunately, the others declined. My final method to set their minds and spurs to rest was sadly rejected by them, even though I did all I could to support them financially and emotionally. The time and address for the final solution are attached. Sincerely, Malachi Zai. P.S. My thoughts and condolences go out to you and your family during this time. I have enclosed a check for any funeral expenses for your sister Sylvia. Please use it accordingly. The final solution that I hope you will be attending would have healed her and relieved her of the grief from the loss of your daughter. And sadly, she chose to do otherwise. I am deeply sorry.
John folded it and handed the letter back.
Your sister. I recall her.
Lewis put the paper back in his jacket pocket.
I know. Sorry. Everyone is sorry. All these words from so many people, but no action?
He blurted out, trying to contain his frustration and rage.
From the lawyers? From the other family members? Everyone! Words didn't stop him not going to jail or getting punished. Words did not stop my sister from swallowing a bottle of pills because that fucker was set free. Oh no!
He pounded the side of his fist on the table. Jeremy leaned over the table, looking to him in desperation.
Mr. Striner, I know how you feel. We all do,
he said sympathetically.
We have appealed, and my sister and I think we have found a lawyer.
Bah!
Lewis bellowed, waving him off.
Do you seriously think that would go anywhere? He was freed! Do your research, kid. I am only a second-rate accountant, but I know a little bit about the legal system. It is done!
John and Meredith both looked at each other during his outburst, both at a loss of what to say to intrude, but knowing it wouldn't matter. Jeremy leaned back in his seat in defeat, shrugging his shoulders as he shook his head at Ellen.
Once Young arrives, I'm sure he'll be more clear about his final solution, or so he calls it. Let's just wait to see what he has to say,
John remarked as he looked from one man to the other, attempting to relieve the tension in the air.
After all, he has done all he can to help us and—
The muted sound of motors stopped John in mid-sentence as the curtain started to slowly rise and the beam from the overhead stage lamp came on. A large circle of light illuminated the black trousers and shined shoes of a single individual. The orb of light continued to follow the raising of the curtain to illuminate the chest and features of a tall and immaculately dressed man, highlighting his bald head and the Asian characteristics of his smiling face.
You are correct, Mr. Richards.
His voice resonated around the theater.
All of your questions will be answered, and have been here for quite some time.
The silence seemed almost deafening as he stood there. He raised his hands together before his chest, the fingertips barely touching as he acknowledged them with an appreciative nod.
Okay, Zhang, what gives?
Lewis asked as he stood up, pushing the chair behind him. The frustration in his voice was evident as he continued, not giving the imposing figure on the stage a chance to answer.
The news better be good. Bringing us all out here to God knows where. Cryptic letters? Not hearing from you these last few months? You better be here to tell us you used all these mysterious riches you have to hire a goddamn hitman to blow Samuel's brains out. Do you have any idea the nightmare?
Sit down, Mr. Striner,
the tall man ordered, his commanding voice raised to a shouting volume. His posture and pose did not change as he glared at the large man. His dark eyes seemed to glint from the beam of the lamp that reflected off of them. Luce's heavily jowled mouth shut, and he slowly sat back down in his chair, his contained anger still radiating from his face.
Thank you,
Zhang said, with a clearing of his throat.
I am glad you few were able to make it. Believe me, it was no easy undertaking to prepare for such an event such as this. When the verdict was read, I immediately had to get the preparations underway for you all.
Prepare? For what?
Ellen asked, trying to make her voice sound less nervous than she actually was. Mr. Zhang clapped his hands twice rapidly. The piercing sound made Ellen flinch in her seat. The faint sound of stomping heeled shoes could be heard, getting louder and louder, as a multitude of figures of the same nationality of Zhang materialized from the opposite sides of the stage. Silent, stone-faced figures dressed in waiter and waitress attire, the maroon vests and ties matching the color of the velvet-lined walls. They all carried plates of fine china, polished silverware, cloth napkins, and assorted cutlery, and proceeded to make place settings in front of the attendees at their table. They all carried plates of fine china, polished silverware, cloth napkins, and assorted cutlery, and proceeded to make place settings in front of the attendees at the table, their motionless faces not saying a word to the confused looks of the five that were seated.
What the hell?
John muttered to his wife as he sat frozen, watching the rapid motion of the servers make neat, professional settings in front of them. They almost seemed choreographed, like they'd done this numerous times. In between the tinkling sound of numerous pieces of silverware being put on the table, Lewis's voice could be heard expressing in disbelief.
What the hell is this? Some sort of dinner for the defeated?
Not quite,
Zhang replied. His accent was distinguishable as he spoke steadily, gazing at the five of them as they looked to each other.
Of course, this feast could be open to more than one interpretation. It is a victory dinner of sorts to you. A last meal to others.
He clasped his hands in front of his face, the two forefingers pointed upward and tapping his lips, which curled in a slight smirk. John held his hand up to halt when he saw Lewis was about to voice his disgust once again.
Mr. Zhang,
he said, trying to contain composure himself.
I am sure I speak for everyone here when I say that it is not that we do not appreciate all that you have done for us. You have been an enigma ever since you have entered our lives, and with the disastrous outcome of Samuel's release, we are in dire need of answers and want this nightmare over. We need to get on with our lives.
He clenched his jaw in vexation.
We wanted, no, needed him to pay. We are at a loss as to what to do, so excuse our frustration. We are angry, and we are tired. Of all of it.
Do you remember the day we first met?
Zhang asked as he clasped his hands behind his back and started to slowly pace the stage.
I... I think so,
John answered, as he looked weakly at the others. Zing nodded at him, urging him to continue.
I remember the days before the trial. You came to our house.
John looked up at the shadows of the ceiling, far beyond the glare of the lamp, recollecting.
We were afraid that we'd have to take a second mortgage out on our house. I hadn't worked in months. Meredith was. We were. Lost.
Jeremy saw the despair in his face and tried to hinder John's memory.
You came up to us as my sister and I were sitting in our car in the parking lot at the police station, the day we got the news that they found Sarah.
He addressed, saying,
we could not find the strength to get out of our car until after you talked to us.
Zing nodded appreciatively. He then turned to Lewis with a cock of his bald head, his domineering look anticipating what the man would say. Lewis sat back in his seat with an irritated sigh.
You came to my office, introduced yourself, and gave me your business card. You didn't say much except just your offer to help,
he said, regarding Zing, detesting the way the man stood there, scrutinizing him.
Then again,
he added,
you knew you wouldn't have to explain much. I just bet you would know I would find some things out on my own.
Just then, two more waiters appeared. One with a tray of wine glasses and the other with a finely carved silver bucket with the necks of open bottles protruding up from inside it. One waiter put the glasses in front of the five, while the other poured with robotic synchronicity. John got a glimpse of the labels and gasped in shock.
Whoa! Wait, is that...
he asked, his wife giving him a quizzical expression. Lewis snatched one of the bottles from the bucket and read the label, an ingratiating smile appearing on his face.
Domaine de la Romanée Conti,
he announced, shoving the bottle in the bucket harshly, clinking it against the others.
Then again, we wouldn't expect anything less, would we?
Zang rocked on the heel of his shoes for a moment, with his hands behind his back. The two men looked at each other as if in a game of mental chess. Elm blinked at the glass of wine before her, afraid to touch it as she asked,
what is going on? What things did you find out?
Lewis took a deep breath, his gaze not leaving the imposing figure on the stage.
Mr. Ching Ho Zhang, a.k.a. Malachi, born in the Guangdong province of Gansu, China in 1945. Born to migrant worker parents who died in 1961. Due to unsavory conditions, he was shuffled around in numerous orphanages, which all probably had the same, if not worse, conditions during Chairman Mao's rule during that time.
Zane looked at him with a grin, his eyes not leaving Mr. Strainer's face as he waited for the large man to continue. Lewis picked up his glass, took a long sip, and inspected the contents appreciatively in the theater light. The others gazing at him in intense interest as he recommended Zing's biographical history.
Yeah. It also seems like our mysterious benefactor has made it a habit of helping people. Not those of the famous elite, mind you, for the last few years. Showing up at cases like ours.
What? What do you mean?
Jeremy asked. Lewis rolled the stem of the wine glass, admiring the liquid.
You ever hear about the Reinhold case?
Zane stood frozen on the stage, his eyes still unblinking despite the beam of the light that shone off them.
Yep,
Lewis remarked.
One of my so-called informants showed me a picture after the trial. You could see Zhang in the background talking to one of the families, then another picture of him talking to another.
Wow, Mr. Strainer,
Jeremy remarked.
Are you sure you are a CPA? You would make a great detective.
Lewis chuckled.
Kid, trying to keep my business running in this economy. I research a lot of stuff. Hell, who needs to pay an accountant today when you can do your taxes online for free? I especially do my homework when someone comes to help me financially. That is something we all have in common here.
He looked at Zing up on the stage.
But then again, you already knew we would not turn you away, didn't you?
They all turned to Zing, gauging his response. There was silence for a few moments, until the tall Asian man unclasped his hands from behind his back and proceeded to clap in an apathetic form of applause.
"Very well done, Mr. Striner,"
he responded.
"I commend you on the probing of my biographical history. Of course, it is, how you say it, skimming the surface of my less than industrious background."
Lewis raised the glass in a meager toast.
"Oh, I am sure there is more, much more, but I fear digging any deeper would be detrimental to my well-being."
Zane nodded respectfully.
"You found what I wanted you to find, Mr. Striner. As for your well-being, I would never harm you or anything you would uncover. But rather, I want to bring comfort in the tragedy that has befallen your life. All of your lives,"
he said, then addressing the rest of them.
"When you leave here tonight, be rest assured that your life will be enriched in ways you cannot imagine, and the much-needed healing process will begin."
Meredith lifted her glass in a weak hand, shakily putting it to her lips, taking a scant sip and not tasting it.
"That will not get our daughter back,"
she muttered, trying to hold back tears.
"The monster is free. No amount of money will ever get our daughter back."
She set the glass down, almost spilling it. John turned to his wife. The look on her face matched the helplessness he felt. They had tried so hard to get through the last few months, and no amount of counseling, spiritual help, or their love could ever convalesce losing their daughter in such a way. He knew he had been her anchor all the years they had been married, but the deterioration this had been doing to them both was something he could not control. He pushed his chair back and stood up.
"Look, Mr. Zhang,"
he said, still looking at his wife.
"I'm sure I speak for everyone here when I say that there is no way we can thank you enough for all you have done. I don't care about your reasons for doing this or your history."
He turned and gazed indifferently to the man on the stage.
"But whatever you have planned here will not change anything. We are beyond any Tony Robbins, Susie Orman crap right now."
"Yeah,"
Lewis blurted out.
"Unless you're here to tell us that you put a bullet in the head of Samuels, then I agree."
He took another gulp of wine and pushed his chair back to stand. Jeremy and Helen both looked at each other with a shrug of their shoulders and proceeded to do the same.
"Be rest assured, my friends. Before this night is through, Mr. Samuels will be taken care of, and you will leave here with a renewed sense of life."
His emotionless, haunting voice seemed to echo all around.
"Please stay."
A sardonic smile formed on his face that reflected the light, almost glimmering as the five froze in place. They then heard the rolling of wheels and the sound of switches as the other lamps blazed from overhead, bathing Zane as other waiters and waitresses appeared from both sides of the stage. A couple of them were wheeling out what seemed to be an enormous stainless steel grill as others pulled out a small, cloth-covered table. An array of different-sized surgical instruments reflected the gleam of the elevated lights. Zane was oblivious to the servants behind him as he motioned the confused and shocked looks of the small group before him. His outstretched arm, with his palm up in the direction of the table, they were just about to leave.
"Please."
They exchanged looks at each other, a mixture of shock and confusion, more than a few furrowed brows at what he had said. As they seated themselves, Ellen was the first to ask.
"What do you mean by taken care of?"
In between the sounds of the servants wheeling out a few other smaller tables, covered, but with unmistakable sounds of china and the tinkling of unseen metal implements, Zane replied,
"My dear, there is one thing you all have in common here tonight, that justice has not been served. Tonight will answer all of your questions and rectify that situation."
Their attention was diverted to a humming noise, as a large steel hood descended from the workings of a track lighting above the stage. It lowered right above the position grill, a wide, flexible foiled duct that was attached to somewhere higher than they could see, elongating as it dropped. Other waiters were pulling out gas lines from the end of the stage to attach the grill as they watched.
"You are about to witness and take part in a ritual that few have ever done, the likes of which that will change you for years to come."
One waiter appeared at his side with a serving tray and a glass of wine. Zane took it and raised it before him.
"Gambe,"
he said.
"A toast to you all, and may you not just dine well in body, but may you dine well in spirit."
He waited until they raised their glasses. a mixture of apathy and discontent on their faces. They all took a long drink. Jeremy and Ellen take another longer sip, a slight marveling expression on their faces from the extravagant flavor of the wine. The squeaking of wheels could be heard from the right of the stage as a hospital gurney was slowly pushed to a stone-faced waitress, with the unmistakable shape of a body underneath the white sheet that covered it. Ellen let out a small shriek as Meredith gasped. What shocked them more than the sudden appearance of such a thing was something else. The body that was covered was struggling, and muted sounds could be heard as the sheet twitched.
Wait a goddamn minute!
Lewis shouted.
What the hell is this?
John said not a word as he gaped, open-mouthed, at the scene before him. The shrill noise of the wheels ceased as the waitress stopped the gurney next to Zhang and proceeded to unroll the sheet off of the struggling body underneath. The tall Asian man finished his long drink of wine in a satisfied manner, showing no concern to the other's sounds of disgust. Except for a pair of boxers, damp with sweat from his exertions, the middle-aged man was bare of any other clothing as he lay strapped to the bedding of his gurney. His shins and wrists were chafed from the thick leather belts that held him in place. A thicker strap that overlapped his hairy, perspiring belly seemed to almost cut into the skin of his abdomen. The grayish hair on his head was in disarray, from whipping back and forth in a useless attempt to free the gag that covered his mouth. He lifted his head up and tried to shout through the gag, his eyes bulging in hateful glare at Zhang.
Dear God!
Jeremy muttered in shock. Meredith stood up, her hands to her mouth, her chair tipping over onto the polished floor. The sound of the oak wood hitting it was the only other sound as her eyes started to tear up.
Whoa. Whoa. Hold on,
John said as he wrapped his arm around his shocked wife, pulling her to him. His other arm extended, palm forward as if trying to halt the scene before him.
Just wait 1 minute here.
Oh, I knew it.
Lewis leaned back in his chair in shock.
I had a feeling that this was what this was all about,
he said resignedly, with a mixture of loathing and hate, as he slowly leaned forward.
So this is it. Your final solution. You're gonna kill the fucker and we're gonna celebrate with a dinner?
He swallowed hard after saying the last words, trying to contain the bile that was starting to rise in his throat. Zhang gave an indifferent shake of his head.
Not really. You say he is going to be the dinner.
The ensuing silence that followed was interrupted by a loud clicking that echoed in various areas around the theater. A sound of bolts sliding in place that they soon recognized as heavy doors being locked. Ellen screamed.
What is going on?
Zhang, you cannot be serious!
Lewis shouted as he stood up and pounded the side of his fist on the table, making the utensils bounce with a clatter that could barely be heard in between the sobs of Meredith, her hands covering her face as she cried into John's shoulder. Jeremy took Ellen's hand and pulled her out of her seat, and they rushed for the entrance from which they came.
Lewis was right!
John shouted, holding his weeping wife to him.
This has to be some sort of sadistic junk!
They heard a shout and a curse from Jeremy far behind them, as a waiter came up to Zhang, taking the empty wine glass that was held out to him and exiting to the right of the stage.
Not a joke at all, Mr. Richards. Have you known me to make a jest about anything?
But what you are suggesting is sick! Barbaric! After all my wife and I have been through, after everything we and the other families have been through, to shock us with this, and for you to bring that monster here in such a way... to expecting us to...
John bellowed, his face red with rage and disgust. He tried to avoid looking at the struggling man bound to the gurney, wriggling violently to free himself.
Exactly what was it you expected when I invited you all here?
Zhang asked in an authoritative voice. He walked stoically to the stage, his arms spread out, admiring the recesses above him.
Something as grand as this was provided for you. Did you expect some life-altering words on how to cope with the unnameable loss you all have suffered? Some sort of monetary compensation for how your mockery of the legal system had let you down?
Jeremy materialized next to John, Ellen's hand clasping his with a visage of fright.
We are locked in here,
he blurted out. He turned to his sister.
Call the police!
You are more than free to do so,
the tall man said, cocking his head and scrutinizing Ellen as she shakily dug into her purse.
But exactly what would you tell them? Are you sure you would want your names and faces more in the media than they already have been?
Ella ignored him as she started tapping on her phone frantically.
Wait!
Lewis shouted at her. She froze and looked at him with tear-filled eyes, one shaking finger poised above the screen. Lewis, with his hands planted firmly on the table, glared at her.
Just hold on a second,
he said through gritted teeth, his red, perspiring face trying to get himself under control. Ellen and Jeremy both looked at John as he stared at Zhang incredulously, indecisive as what to do. Jeremy was about to protest when John held out his hand.
Yeah, just,
he muttered. Meredith whipped her head back and looked at him, wide-eyed and shocked, her face smeared with tear-streaked mascara.
Zhang, Malachi, whoever you are,
he continued, ignoring the look from his wife.
What makes you think that we could even listen? Just let us out. We will not say a thing to anyone. We promise.
Oh, I am not worried about that, Mr. Richards. I have complete confidence that when you leave here, it will be the furthest thing from your mind.
Samuel started to thrash violently on the gurney, making the unlocked wheel start to roll feebly across the stage. A couple of motionless waiters appeared and locked the wheels to cease the motion. They disappeared just as quickly.
Now, let me ask you all a question. What did you expect to find when I called you here tonight? What did you secretly hope for? News that I had killed Samuels? That I got him whacked? As you Westerners have a fond of saying?
No one said a word as they looked at him in shock. Their silence was the answer he expected. Meredith looked at Samuels in a mixture of disgust and fear. She gave Zhang a glare.
This? This is what you meant to do all this time?
She asked in a raspy, dry voice.
Mr. Sarainer, a question for you.
Zhang asked with a degree of confidence, ignoring Meredith.
You have spoken to other victims' families that I have assisted in the past. Am I correct?
Lewis straightened up, and after a few moments of contemplating silence, he replied.
Yes, I have.
Did they reveal to you my rather utter method and the details of how I had assisted them?
Lewis thought for a moment, then bowed his head as if in defeat. He then looked up at the recesses of the high ceiling of the theater, an odd look upon his face.
No, they didn't. They just said that what you did helped them in ways they could not imagine. You helped them move on.
There was the sound of a slight whoosh as the flames of the gas grill came to life, lit by a waiter as two large cooks appeared from the left of the stage, a pair of men of the same nationality as the rest, with a countenance void of any emotion as they pushed out a cart identical to the others, except for the items that lay upon it. An assortment of different sized stainless steel battery-operated reciprocating saws, their unused blades shining from the lights above. The others took no notice of this, as they were looking intently at Mr. Strainer, enthralled by the realization on his face and waiting for him to finish.
Go on, Mr. Strainer,
Zhang said authoritatively.
You were saying?
Lewis looked to the others, then to Zhang.
They seemed at peace.
Dear God,
Ellen muttered as she fell to her seat.
No God, young lady,
Zhang said.
Just a method of revenge and ways that are only done by a few individuals throughout the world. Ways not spoken about except in whispers.
He strode to the form of Samuels, thrashing less and less as his tense muscles were weakened.
But this? This is...
Jeremy started to say as he sat down, pulling his sister to him.
The only way, Mr. Coswell,
Zhang snapped, turning towards him.
Be rest assured, if you do not go through with this, I will unlock these doors and you can be free to go. All of you. Even the man who has done all of this to you.
No!
Meredith screamed, making John flinch.
That monster cannot go free!
She started to sob and wrap her arms around her stomach.
My baby. What did he do to my... to my little...
She wailed as she sat down heavily. John, at a loss of what to do, sat down to console his wife.
Damn you!
He said through gritted teeth.
You are not just doing this for us. You're getting a sick, sadistic joy out of this, aren't you?
Zhang's eyes narrowed as he looked at John. A slight smirk came to his face.
I would be lying, of course, if I said that I do not get a semblance of pleasure out of my methods. After all, a person's life work should be fun, should it not? As for you that have come here tonight,
he continued,
there is something that I have seen in each one of you during the trial and the events leading up to it. I have seen it in your eyes, at certain times when you looked at him. It was something I have seen myself in others in the past. It is something I have seen in my reflection during my journey throughout my life.
His voice was so hypnotic and commanding, they did not even notice the chefs vigorously washing the exposed parts of Samuels as he gave a few feeble thrashes.
Hunger. A hunger for revenge.
No,
John muttered as he shook his head weakly.
I've seen many things throughout my life, Mr. Richards. I have watched my parents die when our government let us down. Are you familiar with the Great Chinese Famine? 15 million died. We had to do what we could to survive. I learned at a young age, a very young age, that self-preservation is the most basic of animal instincts, and that any that stand in the way of that shall be...
The sounds of one of the chefs turning on one of the reciprocating saws whined to life behind Zhang.
Destroyed.
No. Please.
Meredith pleaded in a frail whisper.
Your society has been weak, very weak, for a very long time.
Ellen swallowed hard, her eyes wide and unblinking as she stared at Samuels. She realized she felt nothing as his eyes bore to hers, silently.
And I have spent the last 30 years of my life successfully causing what you might call ripples in the sea of injustice that will eventually lead to the tide of retribution for any that will harm a child. As I have seen so many in your country suffer, I have created a plan.
The other chef uncovered one of the small tables that had been rolled out. An assortment of glass spice bottles caught the light from overhead.
That is twofold. A therapeutic means that will avenge those innocent lives and bring a new enlightenment to those whose lives were shattered. This is a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
Louis slapped his hand over his mouth as one of the chefs pushed the spice cart next to the grill. He opened up a few random bottles and set them aside. Immediately, he went to the other cart and carefully lifted up a scalpel, and both chefs walked to the gurney. The shrill noise of the saw failed to drown out Zhang's voice, which grew steadily louder in tone.
An experience that will show you that revenge is not a dish best served cold.
This is not the way,
Jeremy muttered. He knew he should protest with more conviction than he was. But Zhang's voice was hypnotic, as hypnotic as what was about to occur before his very eyes. He thought for a split second that this was wrong. So very, very wrong. But their sister, the other's daughters, what Samuels had done to them, he wanted them to pay. He pulled the gaze away from Samuels as he had a burst of energy, just for a moment, in one last feeble attempt to get free, to look at the others. They all had a look of extreme disgust mixed with expectation. In that moment, he knew they all wanted it. Some primal instinct to see him suffer, to see him in pain, that deep down they all wanted this, waited for this on a deep psychological level.
But served medium rare and properly seasoned.
Jeremy whipped his eyes back to the chefs as they walked behind the gurney. Scalpel and saw poised above the twitching thighs of Samuels. Jeremy tried to will himself to stand, but could only slam his hands onto the table, palms clammy with sweat as he shouted,
"Do it!"
The chef lowered the saw blade in Samuels' leg, immediately cutting into the tense muscle. Blood sprayed onto his chef's coat. The muffled scream from Samuels could be faintly heard through the gag as he shrieked. The thrashing of his body just made the jagged blade go deeper. Zhang stepped to the side so they all could watch. Ellen jumped in her seat. A quick scream issued from her lips. It echoed around the theater as she let out another. This one almost resembled a scream of joy. Meredith turned away and put her head on John's shoulder, her hand clutching the lapel of his jacket, as she trembled and let out a shriek. His eyes were glued to the scene before him, as they carved the first piece of flesh out of Samuel's thigh. His knee and foot twitched from excruciating pain. The other chef used the scalpel to cut away the remaining string of tendons that still held it to the body. Lewis made an audible sound through the hand that still covered his mouth, eyes wide in disbelieving shock. The chef took the bloody, dripping piece of flesh and carried it to the grill, the air wavering from the heat that rose from it. He seized it quickly from a few of the open bottles and tossed it on the grill with a sizzling hiss. There was a slight hum as an unseen fan came to life, and the makeshift flue attached to the vent above the grill began to vibrate, vacuuming the smoke from the charring flesh. It did little to disperse the acrid smell of the meat cooking, however. The chef with the saw immediately started on the other thigh. The cavity of the one thigh wouldn't pump streams of blood that continued to cover the emotionless cook. The whir of the saw matching the sounds of blood splattering on the floor. Samuel's eyes were white. The irises and pupils rolled up into his head, and the gag that was still in his mouth was crimson from him biting down on either side of his cheek or other parts of his mouth. His twitching leg made the saw cut deep, hitting bone with a resonant crunch. Dear God, we cannot go through this, were the thoughts that kept racing through John's head. He finally became aware that Meredith was now watching the nightmarish scene on the stage, and that for a moment, her hitching and trembling seemed off somehow. He became vaguely aware of Zhang's voice as he continued talking, the same commanding, monotonous drone.
The 19th century. It was not unusual for Chinese executioners to eat the heart and brains of the criminals.
Another piece was tossed on the grill. The hiss. The smell. John saw the former piece turned over, a pair of tongs and a large, hairy fist. A glimpse of the underside of that piece. It was charred, the grill lines perfect, as if on a prime cut of sirloin. Lewis's stomach was churning with disgust, or hunger, as he tried to will himself to stand, but could not. Did the lights dim, or was he on the verge of passing out? Could not tell. He heard Zhang's voice as the chefs meticulously started on Samuel's calf.
People use humans, not only for food and medicine, but they also express their feelings of hatred or revenge by publicly eating the flesh and bones of their fellow man.
Time had seemed to slow down for Ellen as she let out one loud audible sob.
So, you'll see how this is. The final and ultimate solution? Your laws, your lawyers, your courts, and even your government have failed you. The disgust you believe you see here is nothing to compare to what my culture and others have witnessed throughout the centuries.
Zhang continued. The blood that covered the stage turned into a small stream, a stream that started to steadily flow towards them. Jeremy became captivated by it, as the movements of the men and the twitching body on the table were mirrored in red liquid surfaces. Silhouettes of shadows worked at a robotic pace.
This cannot be happening,
he whispered. There was a sizzle as another piece was tossed on the grill.
You are faced, not just of body, but of mind. Nothing in all the world compares to the first taste of the individual who has taken the life of a loved one. Especially the life of a child. The most horrific of all crimes.
They did not notice as the lithe, pale hands of the waiters and waitresses came up behind them and put cloth bibs in place over dress and shirt collars, mechanically tucking them in and adjusting them in place.
Sometimes it does not take much to change someone's palate, be it their mind or their taste buds and their tongue.
The grill was half filled in a short period of time. A few shorter chefs appeared to take over the cooking process while the two larger ones kept up with meticulous cutting of the now almost unrecognizable form on the gurney, the bones and cartilage of both legs gleaming in the shining lamps overhead. John looked at the rictus-like face of the man that murdered their daughter. The teeth were exposed and biting down on a gag that were now covered with pinkish hue as he foamed at the mouth in his death throes. A few strips of flesh fell to the stage with an audible slap. John could not imagine the unnameable suffering the murderer was experiencing, but he realized one thing, the smile that had come to his own face.
Changing a society can be done in much the same way. Instead of a sprinkle of spices, You take a sprinkle of individuals, a select few who can.
Meredith turned her face up to her husband as he held her tightly to him, their eyes locked for a split second before their heads almost turned in unison to the activity on the stage. A vision of white chef coats covered in crimson, forms moving to and fro to the sounds of shoes walking in blood, like a moist symphony in such a place as this. That split-second look they gave each other said more than the words could ever say. It would not be until later that John would realize their hitching sobs from moments ago, that it seemed off somehow, were near muted giggling. The sizzling stench was almost intoxicating. As intoxicating as the tall Asian man on stage as he walked slowly to the dying form of what had once been William Samuels. One arm, void of flesh and muscle except for the hand attached to it, swung free from the gurney as one chef unbuckled the strap holding it down. A rivulet of blood poured down Zhang's feet as he approached. The chef, concentrating through a sweated brow, started cutting into the bulbous side of the rib cage with a smaller battery-operated saw.
His heart,
Lewis said with a gag.
Just stab him in the heart.
He did not know where those words came from. Somewhere deep down in his subconscious, deep down as he sat, disbelieving how the form, mostly resembling a torso now, could still be breathing. For some unknown reason, the images that flashed through his head were snatches of the past. Times when he and his sister played Monopoly in their old apartment when they were kids. Him holding his niece for the first time. The look on Sylvia's face as he held the small bundle. Other times. What other memories could he have had but for that bastard, that filth?
His heart, Mr. Steiner?
Zhang replied with a smirk.
No, we have to save that.
A waitress walked up a few steps to the stage, a wide gleaming silver platter in her hands. The chef flipped over a few pieces of meat, their juices dripped into the flames of the grill, like the sweat from his wide forehead, making an even louder sizzling noise as Zhang continued.
For what is an exquisite meal without a decadent dessert?
With tongs and fork in hand, the chef started putting the charred pieces on the tray, each one dripping with a myriad of juices that became a puddle on the immaculate silver finish. When the tray had an abundance of the steaming meat, the waitress turned and stepped off the stage, walking carefully towards the seated five. They watched as the woman was joined by a waiter, a cloth towel draped over his forearm in the most stoic of manners. In his hand, that was at his side, was a pair of tongs that matched the ones used by the chef on the stage, the chef that was now scraping the grill with a wire brush, preparing it for larger pieces that were cut off of Samuels, to the sound of the piercing line of the saw cutting into the ribcage. They watched with a mixture of horror and fascination as the pair walked in front of the table, the woman extending out the tray as the waiter delicately transferred a piece to each of their plates. Ellen heard a dull, wet thud under her chair as she stared at the chunk of meat that was placed before. The realization that it was her cell phone falling into the puddle of blood under her seat hit her. It fell from her limp hand as her arms hung numbly at the sides of the chair.
This is... How can we? I can't.
She muttered to herself.
My friends,
Zhang proclaimed.
You have been giving a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. A chance to enact the ultimate in retribution. To show you a symbol of good faith, and to leave the final option up to you.
The sounds of all the unseen doors in the theater unclicking echoed all around as they sat oblivious to the noise, their unblinking eyes glued to the fine white china plates, and a steaming meat laid out in a congealing liquid that was slowly forming.
You can stay here and be free, or leave and forever remain a prisoner. A prisoner of doubt, not knowing what true justice is.
The cooks and the wait staff all paused in their labors as they stared, unblinking at the seated five, waiting as five pairs of eyes glazed, hypnotic-like, at the meal before them. 1.5 years later, the woman dabbed at her eyes again with Kleenex, which was now just a watered-up damp ball from her crying the last hour. She sat on the bench outside the police station. The crisp winter air had a scatter of flakes that the weathermen predicted would be 6 inches of snow by morning. She did not feel the chill as she watched a number of individuals walk up the concrete steps to get to the warmth of the station. A few of them she guessed to be newspaper and television reporters in a hurry to get the story. She wanted to go in, needed to go in, but she did not have the strength. It took everything she had just to get in the car to get there. Ron had been passed out on the couch from last night's bender, and she just wanted to take that half-drunken bottle of Jack from his hand and join her husband in intoxicated oblivion. She couldn't. She wanted to, but she couldn't. She knew when they called about the arrest that they both needed to be here, but she was scared to death. She waited for the news to show his picture, to see what he looked like before she drove here. She flicked the TV from one station to the next so she could prepare herself first. She knew right then and there he was the right man. Something in her gut told her so. Davey had only been 9. They did not even have him for 10 years. Not even a decade before a monster resembling a man did what they said. There was even talk about a few more boys. This never happened in this town. Never. So, after the hottest shower imaginable, driving 45 minutes to get there, after not being out of the house in about a week, she could not find the energy to go through those doors. She looked down at the cracked concrete at her feet, shivering, and it wasn't from the slow drop in temperature. She should have waited until Ron woke up. She cannot cry again. How many tears can a person...
Mrs. Wallace?
She heard as she wiped her swelling eyes. She looked up to see a man in a full-length wool top coat, sprinkled with a few snowflakes as he gave her a compassionate look. His well-groomed brown hair had a few grayish streaks that matched his temples. She gave him a weak, quizzical look.
Yes, I am,
she replied hoarsely.
Look, if you are a reporter, I cannot talk now.
She started to stand, shaking her head in embarrassment to be noticed in such a state.
No, I am not. Please, can I sit with you for a moment?
He asked. She gave him a look of irritation for a second, and was about to answer when he said,
I am not a lawyer either. Please, may I?
He asked in the same tone. She just turned her head to the side and nodded, feeling too weak to care, too exhausted to stand.
What do you want?
She asked, half-heartedly as she wiped her nose with the same ball of Kleenex.
Are you some sort of counselor or something? My husband and I, we do not have much money.
No, Mrs. Wallace, I am not a counselor,
he answered, cutting her off as he reached into his coat and brought out a white clean handkerchief. He handed it to her, and she looked at it a moment in indecision. She took it and started dabbing at her nose and the forming tears in her eyes.
Thank you,
she said, as she tried to avoid the looks from other people coming up the courthouse steps, thankful that a few did not seem to recognize her. He looked at her with the same compassionate look.
I am far from it. My wife is the counselor. She has a way of bonding with people. She was a mother, too.
The woman gave him a questionable look.
Was?
She asked, dabbing her cheeks. Seeing him closer like this, he seemed familiar. The man sat up straight, taking in a breath of the crisp early afternoon air before he replied. He had a confident look about him that she found attractive. He was a man that had an aura of strength and security about him. She remembered when Ron used to be like that. How could she be strong for both of them?
My wife's name is Meredith. Meredith Richards.
The woman's eyes widened in realization.
Oh my God.
She exclaimed.
You're John. John Richards. I remember seeing you and your wife on those talk shows a while ago. I am so sorry.
She dabbed her eyes and face in a futile attempt to look presentable. Her eyes started to swell up with more tears as she remembered.
Your daughter, and that bus driver that disappeared after the trail.
She felt herself starting to break down again. The sobs rose in her throat quicker than she could contain it.
I am so, so...
She didn't realize until moments later that she was crying on his shoulder as he held her. He didn't say a word as he rubbed her shoulder in comfort as she wept. Left thinking about the face of his daughter. How those eyes matched Davy's. Eyes she will never see again. She composed herself as she sat up and wiped her face, the handkerchief getting as moist as the Kleenex before. She thought for a moment as he looked at her, his eyes saying more than any words could. Kind eyes. Strong eyes.
How can I ever go on? My husband... How can we survive this?
She asked, her vision blurring again.
We did, Mrs. Wallace. Someone has shown us a way to hope, you might say.
Recollection came to her.
That theater that you and the other parents are involved in. The one where those orphan children perform the charity. I saw that on TV. Those children singing was beautiful. Raising all that money for the survivors of...
Her lip trembled, thinking about those children. She fought not to break down again as John gave her a smile.
We are all survivors in our own way, Mrs. Wallace. It may not seem like it now, but there is a way I can help you. I and a friend of mine.
She looked at him with a tinge of hopefulness. His words sounded so soothing. How can he sound so confident after all he and his wife had been through? After that man went free and is still out there somewhere. She could not imagine how they managed to overcome all that and do all those things for others.
Please.
She remarked, clearing her throat and trying to regain some composure.
Call me Donna.
He smiled in a way that she could not identify.
Donna,
he said. He extended his hand for a shake. As she took it, she felt how firm and warm his grip was.
Before you go inside, would you like to go somewhere for coffee? Nothing starts the healing process like a good cup of coffee.
He remarked with a grin.
Or a bite to eat.
Don't run away. It wasn't real. It was only just pretend. Ah, well. For those of you with a stronger constitution, why not stop by our merchandise store and check out the interesting items from the show and our resident artists. Also, don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel and like our Facebook page. You can also find us on iTunes and a variety of online platforms. Just search for the hashtag Satanic Players. What do you think? Will you summon and let us in?